Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Writer Alice Walker once said, "Is solace anywhere more comforting than in the arms of a sister?" Many women count their sisters as best friends and confidants, while others struggle to maintain even a superficial relationship. In a new book, linguist Deborah Tannen explores the complex and unique relationships between sisters and offers advice on strengthening the bonds between them. It is titled, "You Are Always Mom's Favorite." And Deborah Tannen joins me in the studio. What a pleasure to have you back again, Deborah Tannen.
It's always a delight to talk to you, Steve.
You can join our conversation with Deborah and tell your stories about your experiences with your own sisters. We really would welcome that at 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. Of course, Deborah has written many books, and I must say her earlier book on communicating between husbands and wives. You Just Don't Understand is a book that we did a conversation on public television many years ago, and I think I learned more about what I was doing wrong in talking to my wife from that conversation than almost anything else, any other conversation. People still see you as almost as a therapist as opposed to a linguist. I mean, you study language, but the whole point of this book is the relationships behind the language.
Yeah, and sisters in particular talk to each other usually in general more than they talk to their brothers or than brothers talk to each other, and I study talk. Yes, I'm a linguist, but once you start looking at what people say to each other, it's not very far before you're looking at the relationship, and that's what I'm interested in, how talking one way or another affects relationships.
And let's start with this title, "You Are Always Mom's Favorite!" exclamation point. And you talk in the book about how all relationships between sisters are a combination of closeness and competition. That is sort of ambivalence at the heart of every sisterly relationship.
Yeah. If you're in the same family, spend a huge amount of time together if you're close in age. But in any case, clearly there's that connection. But there's always the competition because you're looking for attention and various kinds of goodies, you know, from the same source, from the parents. And this can go on. It can be very funny and very very slight, or it can be significant. But I think, for example, a conversation among adult women in their 60s and the parents' mothers aging, and one said, "I spoke to Mom twice yesterday." And the other said, "Well, I spoke to her once, but it was a better conversation." So the competition can be good-humored, but there is always that comparison. And sometimes comparison is as pernicious as competition. So very often families label or pigeonhole each other. One is the artist, the other is the athlete. One's the reader, the other is the joke teller. And then, of course, the most damaging, the pretty one and the smart one.
Right.
And it's as if you can't be both. And then it's really a strange alchemy by which a compliment to one can be taken as an insult to the other. So a former student of mine commented when her mother would tell both her and her sister they were beautiful, but when each one heard the other one being complimented, she'd think, "Uh-oh, she's telling me I'm ugly."
Why do people think, particularly sisters, think that this parental affection is a zero-sum game, and that if one gets something, it somehow diminishes your role or your stature?
Yeah. I want to emphasize that that's not always the case, that often sisters really are totally for each other. I always want to make that clear. But because parents can't be looking at two people at the same time, how do you know what you want except by seeing somebody close to you get it? So I think, for example, of someone who said, "My sister always got blue and I always got pink, so I wanted blue." And I commented, it's not the inherent value of blue or pink, it's about green. The grass is always greener on your neighbor's lawn. It's just thinking, it's in her hands, maybe that's what I should have.
I'm sitting here listening to you and thinking of this old, old joke about the wife who buys, you know, two ties for her husband, a red tie and a blue tie, and he comes down in the morning with the red tie. She bursts into tears and says, "You don't like the blue one?"
Well, it's maybe a similar impulse. But comparison and competition can also be inspiration.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that's important, too.
Absolutely.
So you might see an older sibling accomplish things, and that might make you think, oh, boy, I can never compete. Or it might make you think, wow.
I'm going to work harder and to meet or exceed them.
Yeah. And in fact, a woman told me she got a promotion at work, and when she told her sister, she felt a little bit competitive. And then she went and asked for a promotion, and she got promoted too. She wouldn't have thought of asking for it if she hadn't seen her sister get that promotion. So it can be an inspiration.
Now, you've written many books about different relationships, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives. What defines the sisterly relationship as different from all the others?
The fact that they are the connection and the hierarchy and competition are both built in. And that is endlessly fascinating. Because of the age lineup, sisters, we say we're like sisters, by which we mean we're so close, we're like equals. Mm. But sisters are never totally equal because there's always that age difference.
Sure, sure, sure.
Even twins. Something you know about,
I have twin nieces, by the way,
Are aware which is older. And in some very traditional societies, I've talked to families, Korean-American, where everything has to go by age. The older one gets the privileges. The sister who is 3 minutes older gets those privileges because age ranking gives you an order to your life.
But also, as you point out in the book, in the end, marriage is a dissolvable bond, and sisterhood is not. It's forever.
Yes, your sister is your sister forever. And you may decide never to speak to her. Perhaps you've lost a sister, which is one of the greatest losses people can suffer. But she's always there as your sister because she was there in the family growing up. And so many women have made comments like, when I'm with my sister, it's like we're kids again. So your history is always there in the memory of your sister in a way that it isn't with other people. And being like a kid again when you're with a sister at any age, this can happen. It can be wonderful. People tell me they can be silly and they call each other by the pet names. And we ended up laughing and jumping up and down on the bed. But sometimes being hurled back to when you were kids means you feel upstaged, overshadowed. Maybe one was more outgoing. One woman commented, it's hard to remember the strength of my light in the glow of hers.
She's
just more out there. Or you're a younger one and you always felt incompetent, and then here you are again. You're so successful in your work. Your colleagues think you're terrific, and all of a sudden you feel like, I guess I'm just like her but less.
Well, this notion of ambivalence runs through the entire book. It can be the most powerfully supportive and nurturing of relationships. But I know many women who say, no one can make me feel as bad or as good as my sister.
Yes, and it's really the same strength and intensity of feeling that creates that. I think of one woman who was telling me about her older sister. She said how protective her older sister was, which is very common. She even stood up and kind of stretched her arms out and said, this is how my sister is protecting me from the world. And she said, we talk on the phone, and then when we run out of things to say, we just leave the phone line open. It's just comfort to know the other one's there. Oh, I thought this is such a wonderful example of a sister relationship. The next time I was talking to her, I said, how's your sister? She said, I don't know. We're not talking to each other. And I thought, oh, my goodness, how can I use this in the book? And then I thought, well, yes, I will use it to show that the same sister relationship evolves. Sometimes you're very close. At other times in your life, you may not be. I have to tell you the end of the story, though.
Yeah.
I was finishing that chapter, and I was going to end the anecdote that way. The phone rings. And it's this woman, and she said, we're talking to each other again after a year. And again, we're leaving the phone line open to keep each other company. So the not talking for a year and the leaving the phone line open are two sides of the same coin. It's the intensity of emotions that a sister can evoke.
Well, part of what you talk about in the book is that these relationships, as you just illustrated, are dynamic. They're not set in stone. Sometimes they appear to be. Birth order doesn't change. But they do. And one of the points you make is, and my wife always says, you know, even siblings, grow up in different families.
Yes.
The relationship with parents is different. Sometimes the situation of a parent changes. You know, I came along with my twin brother at a time of relative prosperity in our family and sort of calm and peace. My younger brother came along at a time of much more financial stress, and that had a big impact. That's just one example of what you're talking about.
Yes, and it's an excellent example. And it, again, is why sometimes there's this discomfort about one getting more than the other. We are all born into different families because it's a different family when each is born, as you say. And another way I sometimes talk about it is there's no equal protection clause in the family constitution. An example, two sisters that I spoke to and one, the younger one, commented, the one thing she regrets in her life is that she didn't go away to college, whereas her older sister and older brother did. Well, when they went away to college, she was still there, so that they didn't empty the nest. As the youngest, when her time came to go to college, her mother kind of said, well, nobody's here.
Sure,
I'm going to be all alone.
Sure.
She bribed her with a new car to attend a local college. Well, it was a whole different situation. It's not like the mother encouraged one and discouraged the other for frivolous reasons, but it was a different situation, was reality.
And reality takes two forms. One is the objective situation, and the other is how it's perceived by each member. And they're not always the same thing.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that. And I talk about sister speak. There's two kinds of sister speak. One is she'll tell you when no one else will. But another is...
Which is both good and bad.
Well, sometimes it's good. It could be good, right? And then other times it can be the opposite. So an example, a woman who was losing weight. I'll tell you the whole story back.
Okay. this is Deborah Tannen. As always, great to have you on the Diane Rehm Show. Her new book is You Were Always Mom's Favorite, Sisters in Conversation Throughout Their Lives. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. And Deborah and I will be back. We'll open the phones and... You tell us about your own sisters. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. My guest this hour, Deborah Tannen. Her new book, You Were Always Mom's Favorite, Sisters in Conversation Throughout Their Lives. Now, you use the word conversation in the title. One of the things you say is one of the defining characteristics of the sisterly relationship is the importance of conversation.
Yes, sisters tend to, and I say tend to because there are exceptions, tend to talk to each other more and talk about more personal things. And that can be the source of great comfort. And again, the more you talk and the more personal the topics are, the more chance you have to say the wrong thing. confidence, telling secrets is very important to many women with people they're close to. And it's the same with sisters. So that can be wonderful. Here's someone you can tell things to. And on the other hand, sometimes sisters are hurt because they learn that a sister didn't tell them something. Maybe she told her aunt first. She might have had a reason. And that can be very hurtful to the parent of the adult sister. Of course, the book is about adult sisters mostly.
But that I was thinking about the difference between sisters and brothers. I do have a sister, but I have two brothers, and written a lot about the relationship with brothers. And I think you're right that one of the differences tends to be the intimacy, the level of intimacy of shared secrets between sisters is often significantly deeper than with brothers.
Yeah. I want to point out, too, though, sisters can have different styles and expectations, and that can also apply to talk. So I talked to a woman who said, I wish my sister were more honest, by which she meant I wish she would talk about her feelings. But I also talked to a woman who said that her sister had said, don't you ever ask me again how I feel. So we have expectations about how sisters should be, and sometimes they don't fulfill those expectations. So it's important to realize that different styles can all make sense.
And talk about a related relationship, which are, in effect, chosen sisters. Some women don't have sisters of their own, or they are estranged, or just don't live near them, and they choose female friends who provide that sisterly role for them.
Yes, many women said, I have a sister surrogate, or I have mm-hmm. sister substitutes, or I have my chosen sisters, as you said. And sometimes that's really better because you choose people who do not get on your nerves, and if they do and you want to like back off for a few months, you can, which may be a little bit easier if they're not always there in the family gathering.
And as you point out, there's an inherent inequality in the sisterly relationship because someone's always going to be older and someone's always going to be younger. Chosen sisters don't have that problem.
Right, although there can be power struggles there as well. But no, absolutely. And you've made several references to the age difference, and that mm-hmm. is something that was so fascinating to me because, again, I have two older sisters. The oldest sister in particular is a very special role in the family. Often I was told that an older sister was bossy, judgmental, as well as protective. And I thought, well, now why is that? Well, she was often expected to tell the younger ones mm-hmm. what to do. She often did know better. And, you know, maybe that can become a habit.
She was designated by the mother to take that role as well, often.
Yes, often it's self-selected and often it was assigned. So it seemed like a kind of unfair built-in injustice that she's expected to be like a mother in many ways and then is resented for it. But the oldest one often was described as a gateway to the world and could be a bridge from the parents to the outside world, especially if they're immigrants, or the parents to the younger siblings. And it's a back and forth. So many younger siblings told me of sitting in the back of the car, and there in the front is the mother in the driver's seat and the oldest sister next to her. And they are like a unit you can't get into. And the younger ones are always looking at the back of their heads.
You have such a wonderful way of reducing these relationships to very vivid images. Let me read you an email, Deborah. This comes actually through Facebook from Kristen. I have two young daughters and wonder how I will be able to raise them to be the best of friends. They are close in age, 16 months. Are there any considerations for sisters closer together versus farther apart in terms of age? I will definitely seek out this book.
Great, yes. Now, of course, there's huge differences depending on what the age gap is. And sisters who are closest in age are often the ones that might fight more but also end up very close because they're together. I have a sister 2 years older and one 8 years older. And those are quite different
sure,
relationships.
Sure.
Yeah. The one 2 years older was always there. And we shared.
She was in the back seat with you.
The older, no, that was Naomi in the front seat. often you share a room, and we did share a room, and that can be symbolic of what it's like to have a sister very close in age. My sister Mimi at one point made a proposition. I thought it made sense. She said, I won't go on your side. You don't go on my side. I said, okay. I forgot that the door was on her side. I became her prisoner. And you might look back now and say, why didn't I just walk out? It didn't occur to me.
You'd made the deal. It
didn't occur to me. No, I couldn't cross her. My father once overheard me saying, Mimi, can I play in your backyard? The built-in authority of the older. When you share a room, you have that incredible closeness, but you also have the challenge of figuring out whose side is who. One woman said, we were always trying to figure out how to separate her side from mine, and we never quite did it. And that, too, it's kind of symbolic that you need to differentiate yourself because you feel that you're so close. And I was really struck how many of the women that I talked to started by telling me we're different. And it might be we're close, but we're different. It might be we're not close because we're different. And I think, again, of an example of my sister Mimi. My mother dressed just like twins. She thought that was cute. I thought it was fine. Mimi didn't like it. Mimi recalls, I don't, that when she saw me wearing the same thing that she was wearing, she'd go change. And then I would go put on what she was wearing, and she'd change again. Because I wanted to be like my older sister, but she wanted to be like herself.
And what about twins? That's a special subset of that.
Yes. I did talk to quite a number of twins, and in some cases both twins of the same set, or twins who had other sisters who were not twins. So many of the dynamics are, you find them, but in intense form. We talked about the pretty one and the smart one.
Yeah, that's almost inevitable in a twin relationship, except when you got identical twins. But even there, you probably do.
In two cases, the pretty one and the smart one that I encountered were identical twins, which tells you that it's as much about the culture's desire to differentiate as it is about reality.
We have another message here from Twitter. This listener says, as a probate attorney, I have no practice without sisters. How does the death of parents affect the relationship?
Yes. One person, friend of mine, commented, it's your last chance to grab the love for yourself. You find, everything is going to have the extreme good and the extreme bad. So in some cases, and this was the case with my sisters and me, when our parents passed away, having each other was the greatest comfort. We wondered how we ever would have gotten through it without each other. But I encountered many cases where conflicts arose about who got what. And there were so many ways to, quote, grab the love for yourself. So there might be a feeling that one sister asked for jewelry before the mother passed away, or went to the house before the others got there and took stuff. And so it's just an intense form of that kind of competition out anytime.
And it becomes the currency is more visible. I mean, it's hard to quantify love, but you can quantify jewelry, or you can quantify an inheritance.
Yes, but it isn't only the monetary value, because I came across conflicts that arose over the tiniest thing.
Sure.
You know, maybe in one case, it was a bathrobe, a pair of pajamas, but two sisters, it represents the parent to you, and so each one wants it. I want to tell you a story, though, with the opposite. That was such a nice story. A woman showed me a bracelet she was wearing, and she said she and her two sisters, that this was one where they did not have a conflict. Each took the jewelry that she wanted, but they all wanted this one bracelet. So they all said, well, you have it. And one came up with the idea, well, why don't we pass it around? One will have it for a year, and then the next. And I thought, oh, that's great. But that wasn't the end. The one who took it, next time she saw her sisters, she brought three identically wrapped boxes. She had found the person who had made that bracelet and had him make two more. So each one had inherited the bracelet and didn't really know. There was no way to know
which was
the original. So I think all these situations can be either emblematic of the beauty and the comfort of sisterhood or emblematic of the competition and conflict.
Absolutely. Let's turn to some of our callers and want to talk about their own experiences. Elaine in Syracuse, New York. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning. And good morning, Deborah. And good morning, Diane, wherever you are out there.
Good morning. And let me say that, too.
First of all, I grew up with brothers, so I'll start with that. And then I had two daughters, 17 months apart, and then their dad died. They were 3 and 4, and their dad died of leukemia, and I thought, oh, my God, here I am now with these two, and I never raised kids before. What am I going to do? And so much of what Deborah was saying about this competition thing, it started to grow, and I had an alpha and an omega, and the pretty one and the smart one, but to a degree only. It's what they think, isn't it, about themselves? Well, this sounds pretty corny, but this is what I did, and to this day, they're 30 and 31 now, and I think it was the most important thing I ever did, and I'll add again, I didn't know what I was doing back then, but I had them. They came to me separately. One said, why is so-and-so pretty and I'm not? That was it. And then the other one came and said, why is so-and-so smart and I'm not? I've never gotten 100 on a test. And I was a school teacher. That broke my heart. Anyway, we sat down. They were just little girls, and I had them hold hands with me. We were sitting in a little circle, and I looked at them, and I said, you know, so-and-so may be pretty, but you are too, and so-and-so may be smart, but you are too. But the important thing is that we love each other and that we're always happy for the good things that happen to one another. We're always going to be happy for so-and-so if something good happens, and we're always going to be happy for so-and-so if something good happens. I didn't want any sibling abuse. As a teacher, I saw sibling abuse. Right. I know that's a real thing. And so it stuck. Perhaps it was because I modeled it as best I could, but it stuck. And they're 30 and 31, and they're good friends. And
thank you, Elaine, very much for that call. We really appreciate it. What's your reaction?
Yeah, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that you lost your husband. That must have been very traumatic. But yeah, I think there are many ways that parents can try to reassure the kids it's never going to be 100%. But I think the bottom line is if they all feel loved, and I even talked to sisters where every one of them was convinced that she was the mom's favorite. So it is possible to do that, yeah.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's turn to Lori in Wheeling, West Virginia. Wheeling, Illinois, I guess it is, Lori. Welcome. You're on The Diane Rehm Show.
Good morning. It is Wheeling, Illinois, and it's a great, great topic. I have a situation where my sister is 4 years older than me, and I have a brother who's 3 years older, but they both live out of state, like in California and Texas. So somehow, over the years, the younger sister has become the older sister, and they turn to me for help and advice, and our parents live in Chicagoland where I live, so maybe it's because, you know, our parents are here, but it's just it's so odd that the youngest in adulthood, later adulthood now, I've become the oldest. My sister's 50 and I'm 46. So at about mid-30s on is when I started feeling like all of a sudden I was the older sibling and not the youngest one. So just wanted Deborah's comments on that.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because any pattern we describe is not 100%, and also can change and can evolve. In fact, there are many situations where even in childhood, the younger one will be like the older one. For example, if the older one has some kind of disability, and that too is a kind of favoritism, because that child might get a lot of focus of attention. So the younger one may be the one who ends up taking care of the older one. So all these things can evolve.
And Lori, it's part of what you're talking about, the fact that you live close to your parents and taking that responsibility, that is a very adult thing to do. And that sounds like part of the dynamic.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, growing up, I was just a typical bratty little sister. My sister and I shared a room, and I just bugged her endlessly. And now as adults, it's like I think everything has fallen on me now, and my parents are in relatively good health. My dad had a heart transplant about 11 years ago, and he's still doing really good. But it's just the health scares and different things throughout the years. They turn to me, and they don't visit probably as often as they should. But it's just weird that the youngest sister all of a sudden has turned into the older one.
Right.
The other two rely on.
I wanted to say, too, that I did encounter examples where the younger or older made a point of changing the dynamics. I think of an oldest sister who realized that all of the younger ones came to her with their problems. She didn't ever go to them with her problems. So, of course, they thought she didn't have any. And she just made a concerted effort to tell them her problems, too. It didn't come naturally, but it became natural, and it did add to that equalizer.
Lori, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Let's turn to Karen in Moscow, Indiana. Is it Karen?
That would be Moscow, Idaho.
Idaho. Okay, great. Yes. Thanks for joining us. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. I wanted the chance to tell you my wonderful story about my wonderful sister. I grew up with two brothers, both younger than I was, and when I was 37 years old, my mother sat me down and said, there was another baby. And it turns out that I have a sister, my full sister, the child of both my parents, who was born 18 months before I was and given up for adoption. And I did not know I had a sister until I was 37 years old. And it's been a remarkable, life-changing experience to discover my sister, who is my sister in every way possible and was the very first time I talked to her on the telephone.
Yeah, that is such a dramatic story. And I think part of the reason that discovery of a sibling that you didn't know you had is so dramatic is evidence of how deep that connection goes, the sense that here is somebody mm-hmm. that shares so much, even though didn't share growing up, but still shares the parentage and as you discovered, maybe shared other qualities.
Well, why did you feel so close to her so quickly, Karen?
I honestly don't know. It turns out that our interests are really, really similar, and her personality is more like my mom's. I'm more like my dad, but we just connected immediately. It was almost metaphysical. I really don't know. We both love horses. We both love the outdoors, and we're best friends. And my biggest regret, of course, is that I didn't grow up with her. But thank heavens my mother didn't wait until I was 70 to tell me in a note or something.
Karen, thank you so much for your call.
I'm struck also by your saying one is like the mother, one is like the father. We hear that a lot. We kind of draw lines and take up sides.
That's a lovely story that Karen shared with us. Deborah Tannen, you were always mom's favorite. Deborah and I will be back with more of your calls, more of your stories about your sister, so stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy, by NPR stations, by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, presenting an in-depth look at the digital generation at edutopia.org, and by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary on the web at healthreform.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Young adults are the largest underinsured group in America. On the next Fresh Air, what it's like to get a cancer diagnosis when you're in your 20s and underinsured. We talk with Eva Skoch and Carol Rosenthal, two women who have been there and have also written about young adults with cancer and the unique problems they face. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane today, and my guest this hour is Deborah Tannen, well known to so many of you for her previous books, a linguist at Georgetown University, and now she's taken on after having written about mothers and daughters and husbands and wives. Her latest book is about sisters. It's called You Were Always Mom's Favorite, Sisters in Conversation Throughout Their Lives. And we've got a lot of folks who want to share their talk about sisters, so let's go to Amy in St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome.
How are you?
Hi, Amy.
I am calling because I have a younger sister. She's 23. I'm 25. And she and I are complete opposites. She's a nurse in labor and delivery, and I'm leaving on Thursday to get my master's in acting. So I feel like that's kind of indicative of how different we are. And we fought and fought and fought when we were kids. But recently we got this really wonderful opportunity to kind of redefine our relationship because I moved home in March, and she was here until May. Finishing her undergrad, and it's just we know each other as adults now. We're not stuck in the relationship that we had when I was 15 and she was 13 years old, and we didn't understand each other. And now, I mean, she really and honestly is my best friend, and I love her so much despite how different we are, the crazy different places we are in our life. She's my best friend, and I just feel very lucky to have that relationship.
It's always wonderful to hear stories like that, and I do hear them often. It seems that going away to college is often one turning point where sisters become friends. One may visit the other at college, and then that's the start of a new kind of relationship. Living in the same area or moving from the same area and then discovering that you talk to each other on the phone, any of these transitions can be turning points.
It also sounds like that one of the critical points is for sisters to communicate outside their parents' home, outside the parents' relationship, to have a spend time and make time to be separate. And then you grow up, as you say, Amy, and don't sink into the old relationship that was structured in your parents' house.
Definitely. And I see that with my mom and her sister. They have a good relationship, but they're also 2 years apart. And my mom moved out when she was 18 to go to college, and then her sister wound up moving to Spain. And they never lived together as adults, and they get along well, but they still definitely kind of have shadows of that relationship.
Right.
They both revert to that kind of teenage relationship when they get together. It's funny.
Yeah, sure. Amy, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Let's turn to Kim in Goshen, Indiana. Kim, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I come from a family with two sets of identical twin girls born within less than a year apart.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm baby B from the first set, and my twin died when we were 21 years old in 1981.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you. She died in a car accident. And we have very rarely talked about gay. And when it was the 25th anniversary of her death, I asked baby A from the second set if she remembered that it was the anniversary. And she said, that was a long time ago. Just get over it.
I'm sorry to hear that, and so sorry to hear that you lost your twin. Losing a sibling is always dreadful, and a twin is even worse. But you're pointing up something that I did encounter quite a lot. Having a sister who shares your memories, shares your sense of the past, shares your experience of loss in the family or joy in the family, just as that can be the most wonderful thing when it's not there, it can be far worse than if you didn't have the sister in the first place to compare with. It's like the ground underneath your feet is not firm anymore. When you say, do you remember, it's that abracadabra of sisterhood, remember, and if the other one says, no, I don't remember it that way, you know, I was there, that's all in your head. That can be so jolting because you feel that sharing should be there. So I understand how difficult that must have been.
You know, when my wife's sister died young, and one of the things she said so often since then is, and this was an older sister she deeply looked up to, she had the memories of our childhood. I was losing not only her companionship, but part of my own memory bank. And
yes.
It sounds like you've heard this from a lot of people.
Yes, I have. And as the caller says, there are so many different ways of dealing with the same experience or the same loss. So one may want to talk about it as a way of dealing with it, and the other may just want to shut it off and not talk about it so as not to feel that hurt. And I try so hard in all these situations where people have different ways of dealing with things to just try to see it from the other's point of view and try to respect that could also come out of how strongly she felt it at the time, and it just could be a different way of dealing with that loss.
Let's turn to Amy in Boca Raton, Florida. Amy, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be able to talk to Deborah Tannen.
Hi.
I wanted to say first about the current topic about sisters. I don't have a sister. I have three younger brothers, and I don't have a particularly good relationship with my mom. So I guess I didn't really know what I was missing until I, you know, heard. Like, I can't even talk straight. I'm getting emotion in my voice. But I miss so much sharing memories with someone. I'm really shocked at how much it's touching me. But I don't have that, and I can get a surrogate sister, with friends, but how do you fill that hole when you just don't have a sister? And that's my question.
I'd like to tell a story that indirectly answers that. I was at a gathering, and I was brought up sisters, so several women were standing around, and this one woman was talking about her sister, and she said, "We can't get enough of each other when we're together. We just laugh and talk. She's my lifeline. I'm her lifeline." And one of the other women sounded very much like the caller. She said, "I always wished I had a sister, and I feel so bad that I don't have that." Well, I wanted to interview that woman to see about this wonderful relationship myself. We got together to talk one-on-one as an interview. She started by saying, "I went through a year that I didn't talk to my sister," and she proceeded to tell me the terrible, terrible things her sister had done to her. And then she said, "But, you know, after a year, I realized that I only had one sister, so I would get over it." So it's easy to idealize the relationship when you don't have it, but there are definitely pros and cons
but
both.
But what about Amy's phrase that was so evocative? How do you fill that hole?
I think women do through friends that they feel are totally for them, someone you can turn to. You know that if you needed her, she'd be there. That's one of the major things I heard about sisters. A wonderful story about a woman who woke up in the hospital. She actually didn't know what had happened to her, and her sisters were all there at the foot of the bed, lined up, the three of them. And she knew it had been something serious because they were there. But again, there's the other side, the sister who never came when you were in the hospital. So I think it's so easy to wish we had something because we're looking at only the sides of it that are precious.
Right, but don't,
they're always both.
But don't imagine there's a hole and there wasn't one to begin with, I suppose. And I suppose it would help to read the book. And I wanted to tell you a quick story about one of your earlier books, the Men and Women in Conversation book.
Uh-huh. You just didn't understand?
I was reading the opening vignette about a woman who asked a very roundabout question of a man and then is very disappointed when they don't stop for drinks, as she was hoping. And I was so critical of this. I thought, oh, women don't talk like that. This is who would talk like that? And then I went to get myself the last serving of dessert that was mine in terms of, you know, who had how many servings. And I very kindly said to my husband, "Would you like some more dessert?" Knowing full well that was my serving of dessert. And he said yes. And I went in the kitchen and I'm slamming the dessert into the dishes, thinking he should know that's my dessert. And so I had asked him this exact same roundabout question, and he had failed to say, "Oh, thank you for offering me your dessert. I value and appreciate your generosity," right? That's really what I was expecting him to say. And so that really changed my life and how I interact with my husband and understand, you know, this directness in conversation. So I just thought that was a very funny story, me in the kitchen slamming my dessert into the
thank you, it is.
So critical of what I was reading. So thank you for that, and I look forward to this book.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
As someone who loved that book, as you know, and I said earlier, and learned a great deal from it, I must say that from a male point of view, listening to that story, one of the most maddening things from a male point of view is when a woman wants you to guess what the right answer is.
Well, you only feel you have to guess because you didn't grow up with that kind of system. To women, it's not a guess. It's obvious. And I always say both sides make sense. It's not that one is right and the other is wrong, and either could adapt.
Let's talk to Angie in McLean, Virginia. Angie, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Good morning, Deborah.
Hi.
It's so coincidental that I listened to your show this morning, and I had a huge fight with my sister last night, who is 9 years younger than I, and I always feel like I am the mother, and I'm the person to set her straight and tell her things that no one else will tell her, but it just hurts, too, to know that her anger is going to be towards me, and I do think it's important to have somebody in your life to tell you things that no one else will, but it just really hurts sometimes to have someone, you know, that you love so much not realize that their best interest is at heart. And then I think, well, maybe I shouldn't just tell her anything and let her live her life.
That is a challenge that is that I hear about a lot. We say things to people we love because we care about them. But if what we're saying is you should do things differently, it is criticism. being criticized by the people you love the most, especially a sister and maybe especially an older sister who, as you say, is kind of parent-like, can hurt more than hearing the same thing from somebody else. So I think you have to decide in each case, is this so important that you really need to tell them, even though maybe it's life-threatening, or is it really something you just have to bite your tongue, as mothers often feel they have to do, so that the pain of feeling criticized won't be what's heard, rather than the love that I'm telling you because I care.
Thank you, Angie, for your call. As you were talking, I'm glad you mentioned parenthood, because you were describing what I've always thought was one of the most difficult balancing acts of parenthood,
is
how do you be supportive but not, you know, overly critical? Finding that balance is one of the hardest things a parent ever does.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll give an example that's a small one, but often people can hear criticism even when it's not intended. It's just a small example where a woman was losing weight. She was so happy about it. And all her friends said, "Oh, you look great. It's so wonderful." And her sister said, "You're losing too much weight. Your collarbones stick out. That doesn't look healthy." Well, what was that? Was that sister speak the only one who's going to tell you the truth? Or is it sister speak? She feels a little jealous that you're losing weight and she didn't. There's no way to know. And the intention could have been completely loving, and you might think it's critical, and it might have been the opposite, but you just take it as love. words don't have one meaning, and we never totally know.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Deborah, here's an email from Bill in Winchester, Virginia, raises this particular interesting issue. As a school principal, he writes, "I often saw the youngest daughter of immigrant families become the adult. Younger children seem to learn English more quickly than their older siblings and become the translator for the families as they gradually learn to function in their new home."
Yes, immigrant families are so interesting. Often the oldest will know both languages better than the younger ones, because when the older one was born, it was all the native language. Now that there are younger ones, they speak English to the older sibling, and so they often don't know the original language as well. But absolutely, younger children or children in any position can be the ones who are the bridge for the parents to the outside world, and can get responsibilities that normally younger children wouldn't have. We see a little bit of this, even if it's not an immigrant family, where the younger ones may be teaching the parents about Facebook and Twitter, telling them how they're supposed to interpret language that they hear that they may not understand. So there's kind of a cultural difference just as soon as you have different generations, and that can happen.
We have time for one or two more callers. And Camille in Frankfort, Michigan, is it?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
We're delighted to have you. What's on your mind, Camille?
Well, I grew up as the youngest of three girls, no boys, and my relationship with my sisters ranged from non-existent to very stressful. And so as a result, in my young adulthood, I found my sisters out in the world, you know, and which a lot of women do, I think. And it may not be the same. In fact, I see, you know, with the relationships there, my friends' relationships with family, I see how, you know, they what a real sisterhood can be. Although, like you say, there are many sides to it. But I think that's not an uncommon thing to try to, you know, find your sisters out in the world. The people who are my close friends are more important to me than anything, and I know I can trust them and say anything to them. And it's just something I'm really grateful for.
Thank you for sharing that, Camille. Deborah?
Yeah, and I think that might be a nice answer to people who are listening and saying they wish they had a sister. Sometimes people have one, and they still prefer the friends that they choose.
One final point. If people are out there and saying, how can I prove my relationship with my sister? As Camille said, you know, she has sisters, but one caller says, I wish I had them. And Camille says, well, I haven't, but I don't talk to them. Is there any words of advice that you would give on how to talk to each other and how to improve a relationship?
I'd say a couple things. One is try to take time together without children, without spouses, so that you can...
And without parents.
And without parents. So, yes, so that you can talk about, share your memories of the past. It can be fascinating to start talking about things you experience and find out that they may have felt it, seen it very differently. A sense of humor can be wonderful. And try so hard to see... There are as many ways to be sisters as there are ways to be. And so if you think we should talk every day and she thinks once a month is enough, both can be frustrated. If you can respect the other's approach, I feel for myself, having two sisters, I have a chance to see how different sisters can be in showing their love, and they're both equally precious. I once gave a copy of my draft of my book to both my sisters. One of them read it and made comments, and the other one said, you know, I'd rather make beads. How about if I make a necklace? She made the bead glass lampwork beads. How about if I make a necklace and give that to you? And I treasured it. I love both my sisters. I adore them both, and I love them on their own terms.
Deborah Tannen, her new book is You Were Always Mom's Favorite, Sisters in Conversation Throughout Their Lives. Deborah, what a wonderful hour. Thanks for being with us on the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. And thank you, our listeners, for contributing your stories about sisters and for spending an hour with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.